so serious.
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, we're back for another toy department. Derek Madden, Matt Kolsky. How you doing, man? How's your week been?
Solid. It's we'll get to some of the sports stuff later that have made it very interesting, but good. Overall good.
Yeah, kind of an unpredictable week, huh?
Indeed. None of the sports results you were expecting.
We'll get to sports in a second, but is that more or less fun for you?
That's an interesting question.
Right, because storylines are kind of ruined, right? Your narratives that you sort of been thinking about all season all of a sudden get junked a little bit.
Sure, that part to me is pretty fun.
But, you know, also, yeah, surprises. Like, that's fun,
surprises
too.
Surprises are fun, yeah. It's just job-wise, it's more fun for me when the teams I cover are winning as a general rule, but... when they lose very surprisingly, it certainly makes for interesting discussion, and that's kind of my thing.
Sure. You know, you got one team in an NBA conference finals and another team on the verge of a Stanley Cup out there. Right? Plus,
and a baseball team that's doing a lot of winning, too. So, yeah, I should not complain.
Yeah, really. I think you're doing okay in the winning department. I can tell you that fans of the Minnesota Twins – can look over at you guys with some envy, not to mention the T-Wolves.
Hey, you know what, though? Minnesota sports are on the rise. The T-Wolves and Vikings, I think, both are very interesting moving forward.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think most people around here have a healthy sense of optimism about both teams and had a healthy sense of optimism about the Twins as recently as 2 months ago.
Yeah.
So
sorry, guys.
Yeah, you know, it's possible that they're not going to get on track this season. I think we can say that's done. But you know, some of the the tools that that team had coming into this year, that is more Minnesota Twins talk than anyone ever needs. You're done with that. All right, let's run back some stuff we were talking about last week, because I did spend some time with Coloring Book by Chance the Rapper.
Yeah, against all odds, you managed to find and listen to it.
Yeah. You know what? That was annoying, honestly. I found a YouTube, you know, all album thing.
Right.
And like, I was doing some house cleaning on Sunday and just cranked it up on my television. I feel like it was a thoroughly modern experience, right? I took the YouTube feed
YouTube
from
app.
My phone and
Chrome, you streamed from your phone to the TV.
Chromecasted it to my television.
Wow.
Cranked the TV up. And clean the house for, I don't know, an hour, however long that record is, probably a little more.
Yeah, cleaning the house is not very 2016, but otherwise.
You know, for me, it's very 2012, because that's the last time I did it. So, so yeah, look, as a record to get work done by, not bad at all. I'm not sure I understand the hype.
Really?
Yeah, it's a decent hip hop record.
Oh, I think it's more than that. I think, especially. I mean, I think first of all, we have to kind of frame it in 2016 hip hop, which, is not very musical a lot of times. Outside of the best parts, I mean, Kendrick is musical. There are underground rappers that are. Doing and producers doing really interesting things musically, but for relatively major rap acts, a lot of it has been stripped down to almost drum and bassy stuff with easy couplets over it, for lack of a better description. And I just think what Chance is doing is so much more interesting and appealing.
Yeah, all right, so that's all right, and that's where I leave you. And obviously this is a taste preference, I think.
Sure.
at some level, because I do, yes, what he was doing is interesting. It that's, you can hear it and you go, okay, this guy is doing stuff that other people are not doing. Leave you at the word appealing, though. It's just not my thing. I just, you know, like the gospel influences, I don't care. In fact, I'm just flat out just, I'm just, it just bores me. Now, look, there were a couple songs that I liked, you know. I'm not saying like that I wouldn't listen to it again. I think there's some interesting stuff on there for sure, and a couple of really good songs.
For you, worth the effort, really?
No, it was definitely not worth the effort. Yeah, I would say that for sure.
If I had
access to it, I'd listen to it, but I would not go out of my way to hear that record again.
Right.
Whereas like Lemonade,
you would
totally. Yeah.
Interesting. Well, I think that is really a taste conversation, so it's probably not too much for us to dig into on that particular issue. But I guess, you know, maybe that probably does speak to at least the risk that's taken, if your chance, by releasing your album in this way.
Maybe the chance he took? Yeah! No? All right, fine.
No, but I mean, just in terms of... how many people like you might have downloaded it if he released it as a free mixtape the same way he did Acid Rap in 10 Day? Did you like those, by the way?
Oh, I haven't heard those, no. Oh,
okay. So you really are a chance virgin.
Yeah, I like the second you said might have if he'd released it as a download mixtape, I was like, yeah, I'm out.
Yeah. Well,
the number of downloaded underground mixtapes that I have is and probably will remain at zero.
Yeah. I mean, Acid Rap, really not that underground. It just was a thing you could get for free on the internet is all that really.
Yeah. Made. Yeah. You're right. Sorry. I'm just not a download your mixtape kind of guy.
Right. So I mean, well, then I don't know. Then maybe I do go back to what I said last week or whenever that was, which is that, you know, I, as much as philosophically or theoretically, it seems like, yeah, you could lose some audience by doing it this way. I don't know who the audience is that he really lost, because it doesn't seem like you were his audience to begin with.
Well, but that's I would almost say it's the opposite point. Like, yes, I am a person who is looking for people who are pushing the hip hop game forward. You know what I mean? So I am interested in that. I am certainly a on the more casual end of hip hop fans. I think we can now establish that. You know what I mean? So I would think I'm almost exactly the kind of person that he would want to reach ultimately. You know what I mean?
Well, right. But yeah, no, I suppose so. I mean, I guess here's what... would it be too weird to assign you listening to Acid Rap as homework?
No, I'll do that again.
Because that you can just download for free off the internet in many places. And I am curious to see if this is more of a taste issue than anything. Because my inclination is that if you were someone who had previously heard Acid Rap and truly enjoyed it and had listened to the Donnie Trumpet record Surf, you know, and enjoyed that, that you probably wouldn't mind the extra effort to go to YouTube for the new one.
Yeah. No, all right, fine. I will. I'm willing to do that. I'm willing to stay open. And I know that's not it's not great for debate. I'm not embracing debate by saying that I'm perfectly willing to accept that I probably have certain biases or whatever that are coming into this and making me go, eh.
Are you so agreeable?
So I, you know, I'll give it another run. It's one of those things where enough people that I respect like it, and it wasn't like I didn't find it worthless. Like there were definitely interesting things in it.
And it could just—I mean, you know—I think in a lot of ways, Acid Rap is a version of Coloring Book sans a lot of, you know, without a lot of the gospel influences.
So you say Acid Rap over Donnie Trumpet because I feel like that's the more known of the things that he's done.
I think if you want to hear Chance the Rapper being Chance the Rapper, then Acid Rap is the one.
All right. And he's going to play here this summer, so I'm going to go check that out too.
He puts on a fun show too, or I thought so anyway. I've heard reviews of bad shows of his as well, so I don't know, but
that sounds like hip hop. How many guys were on stage when you saw him?
Well, he's got a full band, and other than that, it's maybe one other guy. It's mostly him.
Okay. Yeah. I honestly feel like you can tell a lot by a hip hop show in terms of how many non musicians are on stage at any one time.
I agree.
The musicians don't count. You can have as many of those as you want.
Right, and unless you're the Wu-Tang Clan, like, you should keep the total of other people to, like, three or below.
Yeah. Agreed.
If you're the Wu-Tang Clan, by all means, have everybody on stage. Yeah,
indeed. The more the merrier.
True story.
All right, should we slide over to the Game of Thrones? Because I feel like if we're going to talk about this show, you can't not talk about this week of the show.
No,
right?
We got to talk about this week of the show.
All right. Tell me your thoughts, because I was not as impressed with the overall.
Really?
Yeah. The overall quality of this episode, as maybe you were. So I want to hear your take.
Well, I mean, overall quality of this episode. Putting it that way gives me a little bit of pause, because I don't know that it was like the best, you know, if we view the episodes as like short films or something, or I guess they'd be regular length films. I don't know if it's the best one, but in terms of revelation and mind-blowingness, this was up there, man. I mean, okay, so we should spoiler alert this thing.
Yeah, this is a hundred. Just fast forward to the sports part if you're
right.
You haven't seen
the,
it.
The description has time codes in it, and you're going to want to skip this next section if you haven't seen the episode and plan to. I mean, first of all, the end with Hold the Door was, for me, that's a mind exploding moment. Because on a couple of levels. The first level is just, wow, this has been set up since basically the first episode of the show for this sort of reveal here in a relatively critical moment. And then also just in terms of like the books working with the movies, working with George R. R. Martin not having written more books, and like this is obviously a major turning point for the story, book or movie. And the fact that it sort of comes out of nowhere, and I don't think anyone really could have expected it. That was huge for me. And then beyond that, you had like two or three other major revelations in this episode as well. So I did enjoy watching it. I don't know, you know, it's probably not the level of some of the best made episodes of the show, but there was so much in it.
There was a lot in it. And I would agree with you that it was mind exploding, and I think that might be my issue. So
that's weird.
I mean, look, all credit to them for kind of paying off this thing that literally existed from the beginning of the episode, or from the beginning of the show. I don't know though if that was something that was planned the entire time, since obviously I shouldn't say obviously. I haven't read the books, but I'm assuming that the Hodor thing was taken from the book, right? I mean, the guy's name is Hodor and says Hodor all the time, right? So it wasn't originated by the creators, right?
That scene has yet to happen in the books. I mean, that...
Right.
That's George R. R. Martin wrote that.
Right, so George R. R. Martin wrote it, and they're maybe just... Right, so it wasn't like he necessarily had the intent that this is how this was going to pay off. They're just essentially Martin? Taking a begin. No, yes, Martin. That's what I mean, right?
Oh, so I think he definitely had. I think he knew exactly how Hodor was going to pay off. You think maybe. It's just a lucky coincidence that?
No, I'm saying they took this thing and then they took the beginning of this thing and came up with an explanation for Hodor and put it in the show, because the book hasn't been written yet. So how do we know what Martin's intention?
Oh,
was?
No, this has been confirmed. George R. R. Martin gave them an outline of the books that have yet to be written.
Okay.
And this is an element of that outline.
All right. So
this is something that Hodor was written from the beginning with this turn in mind.
Yeah. Sorry. So great. I mean, great, but not great, because this is where I start to worry about the show a little bit, or about the story as a whole losing my interest. And I because
really?
Yeah, because I here's the thing is like for me, like. I'm not into magic and mysticism, and
okay, but you knew what you were getting into.
Yeah, sure. And the thing is like I can like if you're telling me we live in a world where this thing exists, you know, where there is some amount of magic and there are some sort of rules for the magic or whatever, like I can, you know what I mean? Like I can understand that. You know what I mean? But
I
now,
mean, I think what they're saying to you is we live in a world where at least this one dude can reach across time and space via a dream world.
Yep. Yes, that is exactly what they're saying. And now I'm at the point where, okay, so now we have a guy who is reaching across time and space and affecting things in the past and in the present simultaneously.
Possibly not deliberately.
We have another character who has been resuscitated.
Well, we have a couple of those, actually.
Yeah, we have a couple of those.
And there. I learned this week, actually, in talking with people who have read the books, that there are more in the books.
Okay. So now I'm to the point where why is anything anything?
Well, what do you mean?
Like, literally anything can happen, then, is what you're telling me. Like, there are no rules to this world. If we're talking about time traveling cripples, then I'm out. This is why I think maybe the episode bothered me, is because here we are with.
So basically, this got like too fantasy fiction for you.
Yes. Yeah. With the time traveling and this could be that and the whatever. And then now there's another priestess who apparently has magic powers and like.
Good boy, she's an attractive young lady.
She is. Well, and no, she's probably an attractive super old lady.
That's a great point. Listen. I
like the game. You know what I mean? Like, to me,
what you're saying, and yet I have very little sympathy for you because you knew what this was, and I think.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this.
I got suckered into the forest. Now I'm too invested. in this stupid forest.
I have a question for you.
What
if in next week's episode we get an explanation that gives us a better set of rules for what's happening with Bran, will that make you happier?
I would bet you $1 million that is not coming.
Why?
Because I know, like, you just know. There is no real explanation. Here's the, you know.
I don't agree with that. I mean, I think here's what I think.
I'm on the record, by the way. I think I've discussed this on my pod. More than once that I've from the beginning, I've been completely uninterested from the second that he was pushed out the window, I've been completely uninterested in any Bran storyline.
No, I agree with that. F Bran, except it got a little more interesting here because the reason it was F Bran for me is what does he really have to do with anything and why?
Well, and no, so because it's the reason for me was that he's always this like, oh, this like magic. He's like the, you know, the magic child who everyone underestimates, but he has superpowers. Like, I've seen that, and it's not very interesting.
I think this is related to your superhero fatigue. It doesn't have to be not interesting, and that's kind of my point. Is if you're right, we may never find out why Bran is Bran, why he is the special child with magical powers that everybody underestimates.
You know,
but maybe we do find that out.
But that's what I'm saying. Even if we do find it out, it's not that interesting. Like the special child who can just do stuff. Like to me, what's interesting is the moment with Sansa and Littlefinger where she's letting him know in excruciating detail, or watching Tyrion, negotiate, try to negotiate a peace.
Right
with the people of Meereen,
or the
secession
here
of the Ironborn Throne.
Yeah,
like these are real.
Episode.
Yeah, like there are lots of interesting real moments in here.
You actually, it sounds to me.
Why
like
are we
you
messing around
really,
with the magic, like the little magic boy? It's like
I think you actually really liked this episode. It's just that when it the turn it took at the end was down a road you don't want to go with
yeah,
this show.
And it portends that the entire show is headed towards this road.
And so it poisoned
really,
the whole thing for you.
That really bums me out, yeah.
But it sounds to me like all the other stuff besides the ending, which I was trying to reference when I said there's tons of things in this episode that were super interesting, you liked that stuff.
Yeah. No, there's that's what I mean. It's like, why do we have to do this magic thing? There's so much greatness in the story between people and characters, well, and you know what I mean. The magic is just—it's just window dressing, and it's meaningless.
See, first of all, you're in the serious minority with that opinion. Second of all, I think, unfortunately for you, the answer to your question of why do we have to do this is essentially because that is the that is the palette upon which this painting has been painted. And again, when people were walking through fire and there were dragons in the first few episodes of the show, basically, you know, that should have been your first warning.
And that's the thing is, like, I'm on board there where I'm like, okay, all right, so some people can walk through fire. That's a thing that happens here. I can understand that. But now we're just getting to the point where it's literally just, well, this person may have this super duper special ability and can, you know, and the rules don't apply to them.
I think it's that simple. I mean, I think it's that there are certain things that are special. And again, you had giants and white walkers and wargs and all sorts of other crap that you were willing to stroll down this path with. It seems to me more than anything that you find Bran annoying and the fact that he's sort of anointed to be meaningless. So that's why I asked.
He's been, it's not like the whole story's been pointing to him being anointed for quite some time. It's not like this is a shock. You know what I mean?
Well, I know. But
it is,
what I'm
it is for at least me kind of, maybe it might be the straw that's breaking the camel's back a little bit. I don't know.
I'm fascinated by that. I wonder how many people are in your camp, because if anyone else agrees with Derek Madden on this issue that this has gone, this was a step to fantasy, if you will, a bridge to fantasy. Email the toydepartmentpod@gmail.com.
Let me ask you a question.
I feel like very few people could have made it this far. I don't know. It just seems like a weird straw to break the camel's back.
I feel like the whole story is turning towards magic. That's where we're headed. And I wanted to see
magic.
A war. You know what I mean? I mean, look, I knew at some point, right? And, you know, I shouldn't say I know, but I think we all sort of believe that the story is headed. I think we've even said this, headed towards dragons versus White Walkers at some point,
well,
right?
Exactly. Which is the books are called. You know,
Song of Ice and Fire. Yeah, okay.
Exactly. It's ice versus fire. Yeah. And ice versus fire has always been a magical battle.
Like, exactly. Those are sides, and I can sort of understand that. What I can't understand is simultaneously time traveling through universes. Like that, you can't even explain how this is happening, how he is simultaneously affecting the past and the present, right? You have no idea how that's happening. Right? Did you watch that and even understand
time.
What's going on?
Of course, but I don't think you can rule out getting an explanation for that of some kind. Now, that explanation may or may not satisfy you, but I would expect that there will be something in the way of why or how is this happening. Right, I think we'll get that.
We'll see. I don't like what it pretends. But let me ask you this, okay, just from a general type of interest standpoint. So let's go back to last week's episode, right? The big climax at the end, right? Okay. Everyone loves the scene with Danny – burning down the temple.
Boy, do I.
Yeah. But is your love of that scene going, whoa, that looked cool, and she's naked, you know, whoa, hot chick boobies. Or is your interest in the narrative? Because I would argue that the narrative of just here are more people worshiping Dany as a godlike figure and bowing before her. The narrative of that is not that exciting anymore. It's just, whoa, look at that. Boobs. You know what I mean? And like, that's not a level that yes, you can enjoy the show on that level, but it's a much cheaper level to me than the show is capable of.
Yeah. Well, you're barking up the wrong tree, because as much as I do enjoy Emilia Clarke's naked body, I am a fantasy geek. I love this stuff. And I also like the story of Daenerys Targaryen violently toppling the fucking patriarchy here. Like, I wasn't sure how she got out of her Dothraki mess. And I think in a way, for us understanding who she is as a character and her, you know, destiny, as it were, I do think it was meaningful to see. Okay, so before she was always kind of put forth as a queen, and yes, she's come a long way since she was married off to what's-his-face, Khal Drogo, but she nevertheless has been sort of placed in ruling situations, and now they answer the question of like what it's almost like reaffirming her destiny as a leader and almost goddess-like.
But you, like essentially though, it's like people are following her because she's God, not because she's wise, right? Let me put it this way.
I think that's true, but that's a legitimate reason to follow someone in a fantasy world. That's how it works.
Let me put it this way. So this moment in the show was kind of her Kaiser Soze moment, right?
A little bit.
Yeah. So not in like a big reveal, but in like a thing that Kaiser Soze would do. Right?
Yeah.
So to me, what made Kaiser Soze amazing, right, as a character and as a like a legend, as a villain, was that Kaiser Soze was just the guy who wanted it more than you. You know what I mean? And would do something just more crazy and fucked up and evil, right? That you wouldn't see coming. Whereas Danny is just, I'm not going to get burned in a fire. Like that's the difference, right? I'm just going to burn this thing down and I'm going to be unharmed and you're not.
I mean, I think we've seen over time her apply certain philosophies and forms of leadership that are more meaningful than what you just said. But again, I think now you're revolting against like fantasy fiction standards and fantasy fiction like best practices almost. This is I guess I'm just not surprised because this is how fantasy fiction stories often are told.
Yeah.
And these are the sorts of things that happen and you know, whether it's Bran or Daenerys, there's an element of fatalism because when you have a fantasy fiction story, there's always an element of fatalism, I think.
Yeah. All right. Well,
I will say maybe what kind of got you hooked was the fact that George R. R. Martin seems to reject some of that fantastical fatalism when, you know, characters that feel like the main characters are cut down suddenly early in the story, but ultimately to finish a story of this kind, I think, you know, fate and purpose are always going to become involved.
Yeah. I mean, I think that at least for me, I got, I was feeling like what I was getting was a sort of an epic tale of men and women and power along the lines of, like, say, The Godfather, and instead, you know, kind of dressed up in fantasy clothing, right?
Yeah,
and
but
instead, I think what I have is just a high end genre piece. You know what I mean?
But is it any less predictable that Michael becomes the new Don in The Godfather than that Daenerys walks through fire or Bran effects?
It's not about what's predictable.
Or Bran is anointed. I mean, there's this thing behind it in this story where it's like, oh, that was always going to happen because it was fated, but we still didn't. I mean, that's, you know, a lot of storylines are essentially fated in the movies and shows that we watch, whether they're
the strength of the show that it doesn't feel fated most of the time, like a lot of the things that we think are going to happen, right? The show has a sort of ability to surprise us. So I guess that's what I'm saying is like that. I'm disappointed when it gets rote like this. I think these things are rote.
You've not lost the ability for those things to happen. I mean, But that being said, certain characters still become central, and I think it's very clear that the children of Ned Stark are the characters, the remaining children of Ned Stark, are the characters who are really becoming the most central here.
Yeah.
You know, them.
And I'm now actively rooting for the deaths of roughly half the Stark children.
Really?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I should, roughly half.
I've never been in a better place.
I'm team Arya, team Sansa.
You're not team Jon?
No, I was going to say I'm team Jon.
That's three-fourths of the remaining Stark children.
Three-fifths.
Why? What?
I want Bran and Rickon to eat it.
Oh, Rickon. I forgot about Rickon. Rickon barely counts. Really, you just hate Bran.
I do hate Bran so much.
Like, I think so much of your issues right now come from the fact that Bran is becoming important and that rankles you.
I don't know. I mean, I knew Bran was going to be important. For years I've known Bran was going to be important because otherwise he wouldn't be on the show anymore.
Yeah, and you knew there was magic, and you knew there was fate. So nothing nothing really new has come.
Yeah,
it's just Bran is actualizing, and that upsets you.
It really does. It truly upsets me.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't know that I can help you there, because he – that being said, would it be completely shocking if he died a sudden and random death in the near future? It would be surprising, yeah,
it would completely shock me. It would completely shock me.
More than the red
wedding. God, I hope it happens. I hope it happens so much.
Would it be more shocking than the red wedding?
Yeah. I think it would.
Really?
I think it would if they didn't, unless it was a Jon Snow thing, where it was a story device for a few weeks and then they brought him back to life.
Yeah. Well, but what if Bran's physical being dies and he somehow becomes like a
God, please don't let that happen.
A voice in the wind of some kind.
I think if that happened, and I wouldn't say I'd quit the show. I'm in at this point, but man, I would hate it. I'd hate it so much. all right. I don't know how I turned into the hater this week. Two things that I essentially sort of liked. I'm putting up the criticism for it.
Haven't you always been the hater a little bit?
No.
Haven't we both always been a little bit of a hater?
Okay, we're a little bit of haters. It's fine. All right, let's do some – should we turn to do some true hating? Should we turn to the sports world? Because I think we have a hateable topic.
Hate.
All right, so I sent Kolsky a piece that Michael Wilbon did in The Undefeated, which is now launched. That's ESPN's, for lack of a more artful term, Black Granlin, right?
Yeah. How do you feel about – can we start there? How do you feel about that philosophically?
I'm all for that.
Okay.
I think it's an underrepresented viewpoint on the internet.
Okay.
So I'm all for them telling the story. Now, that's just conceptually, right? Now, there's been a lot, the launch of The Undefeated has apparently been a mess. Jason Woodlock was originally hired to run it, and apparently that went spectacularly badly. They brought in some new people.
That. Yeah.
I wish it the best. I wish ESPN would do more things like fill in the blank Grantland, to be honest, including Grantland would be great again.
They could have just done Grantland, which, by the way, included Black Grantland. There were a number of black staff writers.
Yeah.
It wasn't explicitly Black Grantland at any point, but I think the African-American viewpoint was better represented via Grantland than via most sports stuff.
I would agree. Although I would, we often, rip on ESPN. And I think often deservedly so. But I think one area that they've been really good at is really going out of their way to present a diversity of sports voices and actively looking for people like Jemele Hill, and giving her a show, or Michael Smith, J.A. Adonde, so many of those people. What do you mean those people?
And those voices. I don't want to give them credit for that, but probably right.
You know what I mean? They have a woman doing color on their main baseball game. You know what I mean?
That's true.
Or people like Doris Burke.
They've had Doris Burke do color on basketball games. And
have women calling play-by-play college football, despite how hard they've been just drubbed for that over the years.
Yeah. And I have come around on Jessica Mendoza a bit. I did not enjoy her at first, but I think either she's gotten better or I've become less of a rampant sexist.
I think she's actually pretty good.
Like I said, I was not a fan, but I found myself watching, I think it was Giants-Cubs on Sunday. Enjoying her addition to the booth a lot. So again, I don't know if I was just being a stubborn old sexist or if she's better or what, but approval. And I've always been a big Doris Burke fan. And I think when she gets to do color, she's better than a lot of the ex-player men color guys that we see. I mean, she is smart and nobody knows the game better. So you're right. In those ways, that's probably true.
They put a 7-foot black guy on their NASCAR coverage.
Yeah. But it's not that dangerous when he's a former NBA player. I mean, it's a little you're right. Dangerous. In many ways, they deserve credit for all this. I don't totally want to give them credit because I don't know how much of it is like it. None of it strikes me as like well intended.
Oh, I think I think they've actively intended to add to the diversity in conversation. It goes beyond that, by the way. They have Muslim voices doing Sports Center. You know what I mean? Like, and in a way that is not, it doesn't feel forced. You know,
it feels a little forced to me. But okay,
okay, all right. To me,
but you're right. Part of this is just bitterness against the corporate sports station that I feel like has led me astray so many times.
Yeah. Well, and sorry. That, my point was, this is one of the good things we did. We did get off on a little tangent because this particular article is crazy cuckoo nuts.
I'm so mystified and disgusted is a strong word, and I wouldn't say it's accurate, but whatever like light disgust is, that's what I feel about this article.
It's light disgust. I'm going to use that term more often. Light disgust. Yeah.
It makes me uncomfortable and upset and confused.
I think, you know what? I disagree vehemently with the with the tenets of most of this article, but I actually think I may have liked it more than you do. Because I do think there's at least by the end of it some growth for the author, and that's the thing. All right, so we haven't really summarized for people. I'm assuming most of whom are listening to this have not seen this article.
Okay, yeah, go for it.
Michael Wilbon wrote a piece in The Undefeated about how black people don't use analytics. Black people are just not into analytics.
Yeah, I think that the second way you said it is more what he said.
Yeah.
Black people are not into analytics.
Right.
Is his position.
Right. And really the article should have been called "I Am Michael Wilbon and I Am Not Into Analytics."
Right.
because that's most of what is being revealed here. Now, Wilbon apparently talked to a lot of black people and went to some barber shops and
I mean, get out of here. And get out of here with that. What is that? So first of all, barbershop as this catch-all for where real black people have talks is I don't know.
It's just facile. Like, that's what it is. Look,
it's weak and soft and not meaningful. And if white people had the barbershop as it is conceived in the movie Barbershop and in this article, they wouldn't be talking about analytics either. Right. That's about the tenor and tone of a conversation. That's not about white or black.
Right.
That's insane to suggest that because, you know, casual black sports fans talking about sports doesn't involve a lot of analytics, that somehow black people don't dig that stuff. I mean, get out of here.
Yeah. I mean, it does come dangerously close. And this is one of the reasons why I do think there was growth. It does come dangerously close to, hey, black people are not good at math. Like that's it just feels like that's sort of just lurking below the subtext of this article. And that is super uncomfortable for me.
That's why it's so weird that one of the big poll quotes, which is from Amin El Hassan, which, by the way, they either misquoted him or he misused the word expert. And it's in a giant letters in a poll quote, which is completely insane as well.
Keep in mind, like, people who do the poll quotes on these articles, like Wilbon, has nothing to do with that. It's
what's the editor doing? Yeah. Can I read this to you?
Sure.
Here's the quote. "Don't tell me that there are no black people who are good at math. There are black people who expert at quantitative analysis. I worry that it becomes a way to exclude. Expert is not a verb." And that is in gigantic letters in the middle of the screen.
I think that is literally an error, because I think the quote in the article has the word "are experts," I believe.
No, the quote in the article also says there are black people who expert. I think they meant excel, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know.
But either way, that just reflects to me like who is editing this and why are they awful? But Amin El Hassan makes that point right in the middle of the article in a quote that basically contradicts everything that Wilbon says. Right.
And Wilbon at the end is kind of like, well, maybe I was wrong to hate analytics for like half a second. He's like,
not even really.
But based on what he said, right, was that, oh, this could be a way in for people. And, oh, black people aren't necessarily bad at math. You know what I mean? And, like, it's like, wow, good for you, Will Bond, to come up with that. Here's – look, the underlying thing about this whole debate and I'll probably wind up veering out of the toy department for this. I'm just going to warn you now.
Go for it.
The underlying thing in this debate is that – in this whole analytics debate is that Will Bond – and people who don't like analytics are threatened by them.
Yes.
And it's always – it's because Wilbon has gone his whole life looking at stuff and analyzing it and coming up with an explanation and having people accept that explanation.
Yeah.
And – feeling like he's better at divining those explanations than other
people. Divining is the key word.
Yeah, there. Yeah. And so now there's this whole generation of people who are looking at things that he doesn't understand and using them to point out ways in which what he's saying might not actually be true, and he's threatened by that. And what you can see in these whole conversations is it's an either-or thing. Like, if you like numbers, you're therefore not passionate about sports. Like it's somehow a dispassionate thing, or that knowing
more. Which is
more,
infuriating, yeah. Because I think in general it's the opposite.
Right, or that you're not using your eyes, or that you're not interpreting the data in some way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and as someone who personally struggles with that dichotomy every day that I try to talk about sports, this feels incredibly disrespectful to sports fans, particularly to black sports fans who do want to look a little deeper. Mm-hmm. And I just don't get it.
I mean, I think last year's MVP debate is a perfect example of why analytics are good, right? You can look at, right, you're talking about you have Steph Curry and you have James Harden, right? And you have one guy who's playing on a better team than the other guy. And so then you get into all these things about, well, who is more valuable and what would the Rockets be without James Harden and what would the Warriors be without Steph Curry and that kind of stuff. Well, analytics and like looking at advanced stats and like what players, you know, what teams do when they're on the floor, when the player's on the floor versus not on the floor, you can suss a lot of this information out now. And yes, ultimately, you're going to interpret and decide who is better, but there's a lot more information available to you. You don't just have to use your eyes. And there are ways that we can tell that your eyes might be deceiving you somewhere.
Exactly. And that's interesting if you're willing to think about it. And this article rejects intelligent thought.
Yeah.
It rejects the advancement of the industry. It's insane.
That's what drives me crazy is that Wilbon is an ostensibly educated, intelligent. I shouldn't even say ostensibly. He's an educated and intelligent person who
he's
is essentially
highly educated. Yeah, Northwestern University educated.
Who is essentially decrying the advancement of knowledge. And it is so dumb and ignorant that, yes, at times it is infuriating. And this is the corner he has chosen to sit on, cranky old guy corner. And it's so dumb and sad. I mean,
well, but this doesn't this rise? And you know, I don't want to be too much like the white guy who's immolating himself for the black cause because that's awkward. But doesn't it rankle you that standing on cranky old guy corner, he's trying to make it a race issue? Because to me, that's infuriating. And like, there are so many race issues. If you want to have a race issue in sports, pick one.
Yeah.
But to drop the race issue flag on cranky old guy corner, to me, it cheapens everything.
I'm not even so much. I think he is just I mean, honestly, I think he's looking to prove a thesis that he's had for forever and grasping at whatever whatever straws of evidence he can find to make that case. That's kind of how I look at it.
I think you're right, but I think the fact that he was willing to use this straw when it's so clearly in my eyes has almost nothing to do with it.
Yeah,
that to me is it crosses from ignorant and obnoxious to like a little bit crappy.
Yeah, it's certainly a little bit crappy, and I.
Like a little bit like, I don't want to say slimy, but like disingenuous and Yeah, like, I'm not even suggesting that he doesn't really believe this, but, like, he should be smart enough to think about it enough so that he doesn't believe this.
Here's what it reminds me of. People who really chafe at sort of the straw man of the PC police, you know, who think right. that political correctness has gone amok in our society, and I can't say what I think.
Oh, God, what, that's right? Like the – did you see the – we probably shouldn't get into this because it gets me way out of the toy department. But, like, this survey that the Washington Post published where, like, 80% of Native Americans don't care about the right. Washington football team name. Well, why do we feel like it's okay to offend 20% of people for a nickname of a sports team?
Right. Or – Just because Native Americans don't care, does that necessarily mean it's not the wrong thing to do? You know what I mean? We're doing this. We're not doing this because it offends people. It's also just not. It's also just plain wrong to base a team mascot on ethnicity. Like, it's just not cool. You know?
Right. So precisely, and as I've heard it described, to use a dictionary defined slur.
Right. A dictionary-defined slur. And if you wouldn't have a team called the Caucasians, you shouldn't have a team called the Redskins, period. Regardless of whether the Native Americans are offended.
Of course you wouldn't. Right. I mean, that's what's so absurd about this whole situation. Pick any name for any other group.
Yeah.
You would never, ever, ever use it as the nickname of a sports team.
The Washington Viet Cong. You know what I mean? Like,
get out of here.
No,
it's
you're not doing
ridiculous.
That.
So even non-offensive ones, the Washington Blacks. What?
Right.
Are you kidding me? We can't make a group of
the
people.
The Pittsburgh Latinos. Yeah. You know
That's
what I mean?
That's insane.
Right. Yeah. Like, it's terrible. So, you know, my point about that, right, is that people are like, well, you are abridging my right to say what I want to say and say what I think. And it's like, no, we're just kind of calling you out for being a jerk. You could say whatever you want, but we're going to tell you you're being a jerk and you don't like that and you're chafing at it.
You can say whatever you want.
Right.
It's freedom of speech. But then you got to go stand with the people who like to say those things.
Right. And so it's like people in you know, the sports version of that are people, you know, giving opinions and then being presented with evidence that, you know, that things that the world doesn't match up to their opinion and being really bothered by that. Well, no, now I have to have a math degree to know what's going on. I can't just look with my eyes.
And it's like, no, you don't need a math degree. You just have to try. And if you want to say that you're trying to understand, then try to understand.
Yeah, it's really simple. Like, all right, so we know enough now. We understand enough about baseball, right, to understand that, you know, this is a very basic analytics idea, right? That OBP is a more complete measure of what you do on a baseball field than batting average. Because batting average does not take into account walks. The name of the game is really, right, it's not a time game. It's a game based on the number of outs you make. So
it's
not making outs is valuable, right? Exactly.
Right.
And telling someone's ability to get on base rather than just an ability to get a hit is better information. It tells you more. It, by the way, it doesn't mean the batting average is worthless. It just means it tells you less than on-base percentage.
It means it's not worth what we thought it was worth.
Right.
And literally, the only attachment to batting average is...
This is what I'm used to.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's nothing. There's nothing about it that any of these people would say to defend it outside of, but I already know this and I've been using it.
Right.
And
so,
it's like, if we, you know, if we handled anything else that way, if we handled the medical field that way, we'd be leeching each other.
Mm-hmm.
Because no. I don't need your new technology to understand the human body. I've got leeches.
Right. And by the way, you can just watch one game or better 10 games or better 100 games and understand, you know, intuitively which guys get on base more than other guys.
Yeah.
You can figure that out with the naked eye. But you could also look it up and just know exactly what happened. All the at-bats for the whole year, you know?
Exactly.
So,
and you could also, if you want, enjoy sports without analytics and just enjoy the drama of the game. But if that's what you want to do, you're probably not qualified to be someone who analyzes sports.
Right, exactly. So you're qualified to have an opinion. Certainly qualified to have an opinion.
Of course. Yeah. But I don't think that – like – and this is, I hate to say this because we've talked about how much we both love PTI, but like, I feel like I have to jump off, because how can I listen to the sports takes of someone who is being willfully ignorant about sports?
Well, you know, like literally, I'm a huge fan of Tony Kornheiser's radio show. And we may have talked about this.
Yeah, we have. Yeah.
At some point. I recommend it highly, by the way, available every day in podcasts for free. And on the show, he's often referred to as Uncle Tony. And that's how I look at these guys. They are my crazy drunk uncles, essentially. And yeah. I watch the show because I like them and I like the bond between them and I like the arguments and I think it's interesting. But I ceased to take it seriously as analysis a long time ago. That's kind of how I deal with it. Well, and I understand Wilbon is cranky and biased and chesty to the detriment of his serious intellect. Yeah. And I just kind of roll with that and understand that that is what it is. Now, has my estimation of them as sports analysts gone down over the years? Sure, but I respect them the hell out of them as entertainers. It's an entertaining show.
Yeah,
you know,
you're right. It's harder and harder for me to listen to stuff like this because I think it's so silly and misguided. And frankly, this is the behavior just I've said the word philosophically like 10 times today, but just from like an approach standpoint, this is the behavior of morons.
it is it's moronic, but it's also the behavior of old people who are set in their ways, think they know everything and have stopped looking for more knowledge.
But that's moronic. I mean, you know, in the same way that I think it's moronic that my grandfather refuses to get Netflix when he spends an incredible amount of time alone watching things that he probably would prefer to watch a movie, but he just doesn't want to – he doesn't want
to
deal with it.
That's fine as long as you understand that this will happen to you someday. You'll be this guy.
Well, I hope not. And if it does, I would like someone to put me out of my misery. Because
out of your
misery? It seems like a miserable existence.
All right.
That's further than
I want to go.
I truly, truly hope that I never reach a point where I reject progress at a basic level.
Yeah. By the way, and that is what this is. That's the other thing that this is. This is like standing against the march of progress and knowledge. Like, we know more. It's enhanced. You can't really stop that tide. It's so like railing against analytics is like, it's literally like railing against time.
And by the way, that's not sports. That's the world.
Yeah.
And it's not as offensive or upsetting, but it's really in many ways the same as standing on the wrong side of history with social progress. Yeah. You know, it's the same bone that makes people say gay marriage. No. Marriage is between a man and a woman. Or trans people using the bathroom that's with their sexual identity. No. The bathroom is for people with these parts only. It's standing on the wrong side of history.
I agree with that. As long as we understand that it's just not nearly as serious as any of those things.
No, of course it's not. Yeah, and, okay. Of course it's not. But as someone who values my intellectual life, it's not as serious. It's not the same level of problem when someone stands on the wrong side of this sort of history, but it's the same sort of action. And I never want to be someone who takes that kind of action. And I don't think
comforted by just the futility of all of it. You know what I mean?
It's sad.
In a way, I find Wilbon complaining. I almost called him Whitlock. Wilbon complaining about these analytics.
I wouldn't go that far.
Like, I find it amusing. You know what I mean? Because I know it's just completely like wasted. Like, it hasn't stopped the tide of these things becoming part of the game. And because he's missing out on you know, part of the art, if you will, within that science is figuring out what data really does matter and what data you can interpret and what data you can't.
Wouldn't that be a much more interesting article anyway?
Sure. But he's not qualified to write it.
What if he tried? And if he tried, he found things that he did not feel could be captured statistically. Well, and then he wrote an interesting column about things that are incapturable statistically, which particularly, as he makes the point, particularly in the sports that are not baseball, there are a lot of things, significant things that cannot be captured statistically. That would be interesting. And instead, this is a tired old rant from a cranky old man who's in my view, playing the race card inappropriately.
Right, and also, and by the way,
those
just
things bother me.
Littered with all the trappings, like, the, you know, he didn't actually say mom's basement, but like the stat freaks and yeah. the, you know, just it's just all the oh god, I hate this stuff. It's like it's yeah. all it's all dripping in there, which is what I mean why it reveals a lot more about the author than any sort of point it's actually trying to make. And log, you know what, we should
sentence. How about this sentence? Log on to any mainstream website or media outlet and 30 seconds cannot pass without extreme statistical analysis, which didn't exist 20 years ago, hijacking the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
What he's saying is stuff that I didn't understand 20 years ago shouldn't be allowed into my clubhouse.
a little bit. All right. We should get off of Wobong.
Now I'm all fired up.
You are all fired up. I want to just real quick, because we got to get going, and I'll make this my homework for the week. I want to really quickly praise a podcast that Brian Curtis has started doing for The Ringer on sports media. And look, sports media is a topic I'm interested in. I'm guessing that if you're listening to this, you probably have some interest in it, or you clicked off a long time ago. But what I really like about this podcast is that, you know, unlike the format of this podcast, which is similar to the format of many, many podcasts you listen to, where it's multiple people sitting around talking, you know, or an interview segment, this podcast is done like an essay, really, where, you know, essentially Curtis kind of narrates a little bit, but does these almost like oral histories with people about a topic.
It's documentary style. Yeah. I never listened to like Serial or anything like that, but I imagine it's similar to those.
Serial is kind of like that. I would encourage you to listen to at least the first season. It's so engrossing.
I feel like that ship may have sailed.
No, the first season. No, the first season you can go back and just do. In fact, you'll do it in like a weekend because you'll get hooked. But it's, you know, Serial is a little bit more almost narration heavy.
Okay,
you know what I mean. It's a lot about the investigation.
No, this is more oral history for sure.
With, you know, obviously they talked to a lot of people over the course of the investigation, and you hear from them. This is almost a little bit more, yeah, about a conversation with a bunch of people. And Curtis chimes in sort of occasionally or steers kind of to a new sort of lane and then sort of, you know, has a thesis and a conclusion. But it's – I've now made it sound really academic and boring. It's not at all.
It plays like a really interesting radio documentary is what it plays like.
Yeah, and I just think it's really interesting to me that someone took that approach to doing a podcast. Now, the most recent one – is a topic that's I think been a topic of conversation a lot lately, which is the trouble that SportsCenter's having and the evolution of the highlight in the internet era, where now all information is essentially available to you almost instantaneously, and what that means for a show that's essentially a recap show, and does it become a debate show, and where is the place for the highlight in the middle of that? And I'm sort of fascinated by that. I'm wondering how you can, you know, you're a person obviously who's in the sports media and charged with giving out sports information. What is your consumption of highlights like?
It's all online. I mean, I don't watch a lot of this is a weird thing to say because I watch a ton of television, as everyone who's listened to this knows. But I pretty much watch narrative fictional shows, and then I watch live sports on TV. Even stuff like PTI that I'm, you know, generally interested in, I don't, you know, I consume that as a podcast. I don't watch a lot of shows that, I guess what I'm saying is a highlight show or a discussion show, I probably would not watch SportsCenter at this point in my life.
Right. Are you interested? How interested are you in a highlight in and of itself? Because I do think that my just desire for, like, you know, like, I'll watch a highlight if it's an awesome play, you know, like I'm into soccer, and if I see a thing that's like, oh, wonder goal from such and such, I'm like, ooh, I want to watch that. But I don't necessarily, like, if it's like, hey, here's a, you know, Leicester beat United 2-1 today, I'm not necessarily going, ooh,
here's
I need to see the highlights of that.
Highlight,
yeah, I just want to know. So I want to know a little bit of the story of the game, and I'm sort of content with reading that. I find that a lot of times, you know, because I'm a SportsCenter sound off person. You know what I mean? Like, I find that ESPN in general is
one of the better, like if you're going to have a TV with the sound off, like I do in my office, it's sort of one of the better, it plays well to that. You know what I mean?
Sports Center does, you mean?
Sports Center does. Well, you know, the discussion anyway. programs don't so much. Yeah. But Sports Center mostly does. Yeah. Because there's essentially, the chyrons and all that stuff. There's so much visual stuff on the screen that even if there's a discussion, you can kind of glance up and see it and understand what they're talking about, even if you're not listening to it. You know what I mean? So, it works. It works in that form. But I'm not – a lot of times I'm not that person. Like if I'm watching the 11 p.m. SportsCenter or something like that, which is rare, but if I am, a lot of times I am seeing those highlights for the first time. And I might not know the score of the game that they're giving me the package to. But if I don't, it's probably because I don't really care. Right. So
that's what it really is. It's like if you don't know, it's because you didn't want to look it up.
Yeah.
You didn't care enough to look it up.
So I don't know what the answer is for SportsCenter going forward, but I think we both agree that it's not embracing debate. Like there's zero chance that that's going to get me more likely to watch SportsCenter. Now, I'm more likely to watch the Scott Van Pelt SportsCenter because I think, then I might be getting an intelligent conversation. I'd be interested in that.
Here's a hot take.
That's it.
I think SportsCenter struggles have more to do with its movement away from the highlights than anything.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, I know that seems crazy because, yes, anyone can watch it online, but I think there's a swath of sports fans who will look up their home team's score online or maybe a playoff score online and maybe watch a couple highlights, but who are enough sports fans to watch an hour's worth of highlights and enjoy it and have 80% of it be stuff they didn't know about and might not have looked up if they weren't watching SportsCenter, but just enjoy learning, sort of getting the sports world in brief with video.
All right, so let's say for a second we could dig into Bran Stark's magic bag of tricks, and warg our way towards a SportsCenter where it was, opinion-based, but that opinion was an interesting, elevated discussion, and it was, as opposed to 37 minutes of Stephen A. Smith. By the way, there was an actual SportsCenter last week that contained an hour-long SportsCenter that contained 37 minutes of Stephen A. Smith analysis. That's a real thing. If it was a good, interesting discussion, like the kind that you...
That's horrible.
I know. Awful announcing, actually, I did. if that existed instead, would you be more interested in that product? In other words, is this a function of the quality of the debate or just the fact that there is a debate at all?
Well, again, I'm probably not watching it at this point in my life either way, but I mean, aren't we just talking about a totally different product from a totally different station if we're getting intelligent debate? Like, I don't...
Yeah, well, a station doesn't exist. But
that's what I'm saying.
What I'm saying. Come with me on a hypothetical because that's what I'm... you're saying, well, maybe they'd do better if the highlights, and I'm saying, well, maybe they'd do better if the debate was better.
Yeah, I think they would. I think they certainly would.
And I would say,
But you know what? Maybe not because... I think the success of ESPN, of particular properties at ESPN, suggests that the people at large are not very picky about the level of debate that they're witnessing.
Well, all right, but so you're talking about First Take, essentially, right?
Well, yeah. Among other things, I mean, stylistically, the embrace debate theory, I think, has been successful,
but yeah, but this
ESPN
this,
and,
look,
and
First Take is profitable
garbage.
For sure. Like, it's very profitable. Obviously, there's a reason they're willing to pay those guys so much money. We've talked about that.
Yeah, and
but
I think that's because
understand that success is relative, right? Like, this is a show that's on at 10 in the morning and it's designed to appeal to college kids and people without jobs, right? So, you know what I mean? Like, yes, it does very well at a certain. You know what I mean? I'm not sure that First Take at 11 o'clock at night. You know, which is what Fox Sports is going to try. It's going to try at 6 o'clock or whatever. I'm not sure that is going to have the same level of success because it's not going to be within that target. I mean,
I hope you're right.
There are 400,000 people or something like that watching a Skip and Stephen A. First Take, like a peak First Take, right? It's not that many. You know what I mean? Like, it's a good number for basic cable at 10:30 in the morning, but you know what I mean? Like, it's not that many. So.
Okay. I mean, I think they then propagate
it's
that
fewer
stuff
people than listen
their...
to this to the radio station I work on or the radio station that you work on in a given week, by the way. So,
yeah.
All right. To bring it sort of back to Wilbon, PTI is one of the few things on ESPN that's not live sports that I watch in any sort of foreground way.
Uh-huh.
Right? And, you know, there are a million shows that they formatted like PTI in some way, yes. shape, or form, including First Take, right? There's essentially a flip on that model. And I don't watch any of them except for PTI. And I think the reason that that I watch PTI, despite the flaws that we've gone to in depth, is that it's a more intelligent, educated discussion than those other ones. So,
I tend to agree, but isn't this the classic Hollywood problem of having success via creativity and then attempting to replicate that success without creativity?
Yeah. Well, but look, that's
it's a classic problem of dullards the world over.
Well, and that's ultimately the bottom line when you look at it from a programming standpoint, right? Is that ESPN, you know, yes, they're making their bread and butter in terms of ratings driving are live sports. But they're on the air with multiple networks 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and there's not enough live sports to fill it. They're going to fill it with something. And if it's not the highlight show, then it's going to be more debate. Because that's, you know what I mean? Like, those are the options, because they're not going to just go dark. So,
well, are those, I think
you can only, you know, you can't, it's hard, you know, it's hard to make and rerun just 30 for 30s all day either. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but there's, I don't have the answer for ESPN offhand, but are there, don't you think there's more creative ways they could go about it?
I hope they find them. But I don't know the answer to that. And particularly at the level, at the level that you need to essentially commodify sports discussion to have a successful network, I don't know that that's the case. And honestly, almost watching Fox or NBC, who have even fewer rights and more time to fill and less resources to fill that time sort of shows you kind of what that looks like. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think we may just exist in a reality where there is it's the sports media industry has overexpanded.
Yeah.
There's too much time to fill and not enough good content. And I don't know, like you, I don't have an answer for where the good content should come from, but I am uninterested in much of the content that we're left with.
Right. Well, take your time, use it wisely, or, go read a book or something. Or,
I've been reading lately. It's very exciting.
Look at that. Or do your homework.
Speaking of, actually, I've been reading what's something that's moderately relevant to our conversation, because I've been reading the Stephen King Dark Tower series, which is a fantasy series by a horror writer.
Wow, barf.
I think of a fantasy series that's, enough about real people that you actually might enjoy it.
All right. I doubt it, but all right.
Pro tip, the Dark Tower series by Stephen King. I'm in the middle of book three, and I'm quite enjoying it.
All right. Oh, you're not assigning that for homework, though, right? A series of long-ass Stephen King novels.
It's a lot of homework, but yeah. I will say I've read more pages of this series in the last month and a half than I've read of other novels in the last year and a half.
All right.
Well, it sucks you in, if nothing else.
Okay. I'm reading my man Stephen Hyden's new book. I haven't started yet. I'm going to tackle that on a plane trip.
Oh, that was just a shameless plug.
It was a shameless plug, but it's getting great reviews. I'm not going to sign it as homework as of yet, but worth checking out. Especially, it's about rock rivalry, so it's certainly the kind of book that nerds like us
are into. Send me a screener? Review copy, yeah. And I'll give me a free book, and maybe I'll look at it.
All right. So we're telling people, you're telling me, I need to listen to Acid Rap by Chance the Rapper, correct?
I think that would advance our discussion about Chance the Rapper to a degree.
And then, is that for the people as well?
Sure, if they haven't already, get after it. I think it's just a great rap album.
And I'm recommending the media podcast on The Ringer with Brian Curtis. There's only, I think, three episodes so far. It's not one of those that cranks out weekly, because it takes them a while to do, I think.
Yeah, I think it's actually on the Bill Simmons podcast, or no, maybe the Channel 33 podcast feed.
Yes, it's not spun off into its own thing.
But it's really interesting, and especially, I think you're right. To specifically make the point that for a podcast, it gives you a different approach that is super interesting and informative. I liked it a lot.
Yeah. I wish more people were doing stuff like that. All right. I think that's all I got. You got anything else you want to sign for people?
No, I mean, watch the NBA's conference finals because they're fascinating.
They are fascinating. Here's a question for you.
Yeah.
Are you going to watch Cleveland and Toronto tonight? It is tonight, right?
Yeah.
Or are you going to watch this Wednesday, by the way, we're recording this? Or are you watching the Americans?
Get out of here. I do want to watch the Americans sometime. At this point, I feel like it's too late. I just got to wait till it's over and binge it at some point.
Why not binge it and get in on it now? It's not. I think they've signed up for 2 more years, so it's not anytime soon.
All right. Well, maybe like in an off season, binge it and catch up. But like, I'm snowed under with television right now.
Yeah. Well,
especially with the playoffs in hockey and basketball going on as well.
We're getting to that place though, because you know, once the NBA playoffs end, you know, obviously there's stuff going on in summer, but you're gonna have some time. So I'm gonna say, why don't you carve that out as like some Americans' time? You know, come mid June, July.
Like when I'm second screening baseball and lamenting the lack of interesting sports storylines.
Yes,
that's when I can watch the Americans.
I guarantee. And you see, that's for me when I'm gonna go full on soccer nerd in those months, and it's gonna be I'm gonna be so insufferable, but I can't wait.
All right,
all right.
I can't wait for you to be insufferable with me.
We'll enjoy it. It's gonna be Euros in the morning and Copa America at night with the USA in it. I can't, like, I'm
Copa America Centenario.
That's right. Ah, can't wait. And then that'll be over, and it'll be a month before the EPL starts again.
Do they they play any games in Atlanta? Atlanta in Minnesota?
No games in Minnesota. You're getting some games in the Bay Area though.
We are.
Pretty soon, in fact. In fact, the USA is playing out there, so maybe that should be your homework. Go watch that.
Yeah, I'll watch it. I will not be there.
We're going to get our ass kicked by Colombia.
I certainly hope so, or something's wrong.
All right, let's call it a day, and we'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.